All right, let's get started. What we have to do today, and this is our real responsibility here, is to get a hold of this Gemara, meaning the Shaka, the Tari of the Gemara. I wrote out this page to sort of guide you in the way I thought was the right way to pick out those Tosasin. There are 11 Tosasin on this sugya. We did two so far, two out of 11. So we're not there yet. We're not even Karov. It's only not Rov. But we have to really get somewhere here and try to break new ground and putting all these Tosas in perspective. So I'd like to divvy up the Tosas in into a couple of different categories. The first category is what I call Pshatovna, really addressing the Pshat and what the Kasha is and what the Teretz is and who the Kasha is addressed to. And there I found four Tosas in. You saw it on my list? There's a Tosas Divra Maskil Masiv. That's the first one on the first Kasha of the Gemara in which Rav Zera apparently is attacking Rabbi Chanina. I say apparently because I think Tosas is going to send us down the whole different pathway. Tosas Divrei HaMaskil Nipol, and that's the beginning of the second stage in the sugya when the Gemara quotes our mission of Nipol. So that in the first stage, the Gemara is only focused on the case in the Torah. What case in the Torah do I have in mind? Egel Rufa. Now the Gemara shifts over to our mission of Nipol. And then we have Tosas Divrei HaMaskil V'i Dileka, that's also focused on Nipol. And finally we have the Tosas of Mitzao, and that's focused on the last case of the Mishnah, where you have two Shovchin, and the Mishnah says give it to the closest Shovchin. So in all those questions of the Gemara, Tosas is going to jump in and try to tell us who is the question addressed to, and that's number one on our list. There are two other Tosas, and I think, that belong respectively to different categories, entirely different categories. The Tosas Yosheves really focuses on the issue of Yerushalayim, since there's no din of Hegla Ruf from Yerushalayim, that's derived from Apostle. The question is, what was the Hava meaning that we would bring an Hegla Ruf from Yerushalayim? Don't we say Azlin and Basar Ruba? And that seems to knock out Yerushalayim because all the Oli Regel are coming from the outside into Yerushalayim. And then the third section or category of Tosasin is the Tosas in the sugya of Rabbi Yirmiyah. Rabbi Yirmiyah's fate here in this Gemara is not very positive. What do they tell Rabbi Yirmiyah? Get out. They boot Rabbi Yirmiyah out of the base medrash, and Tosas wants to know why. He presents Rashi Shita, Rabbi Netama argues that Rashi has a right against Rashi, and then he offers his own Shita. That's a whole another category. And finally, we have a Rimi Gashir and a Ramban that seem to reinterpret the sugya in a whole different way. So those are the goals that we have to achieve. I think it's a two-day plan. Okay, let's start with the first kasha of the Gemara. Now, in order to understand Tosas and his insight into the first kasha of the Gemara, we have to review what we did in Tosas Divrei HaMaskil Rov, and that is, what does Rav Chanina add by telling us that Rov beats out Karov to what we already know from the Mishnah of Teisha Chanuyos? Now, again, that question presumes that what do we have in Teisha Chanuyos? And if we're going to compare Rabbi Chanina to Teisha Chanuyos, what do we have to assume happened in Teisha Chanuyos? The scenario. There was also Karov. There was a Rov of 9 Chanuyos against 1. There was also a Karov, in which case we found the meat in front of the 1 non-kosher butcher. So, and yet the Mishnah says we can eat the meat. Obviously, Rov beats out Karov, and that's exactly what Rabbi Chanina is reiterating here. Pshita by Kamashma. Rabbi Chanina doesn't have to teach us a Mishnah. We already know the Mishnah. I mean, you could always say that Rabbi Chanina didn't realize, he wasn't relying upon you to really, interpret the Mishnah properly. For example, the Tosas Rid is going to offer a pshat that in the case of Teish Chanuyos, where was the meat found? Who remembers this Tosas Rid that we did? Yeah, it was found past the Chanuyos on a different street. There were no houses. There were no Chanuyos anywhere in the vicinity. And maybe therefore we need Rabbi Chanina. Tosas working with different premise. You found the piece of meat in this circle of stores right in front of the non-kosher butcher. You definitely have a Karov, which is leading you to the conclusion that the meat is coming from a non-kosher butcher, so therefore it's trade. Against that Karov you have a Rov. So Chanina wants to spell out what? That Rov beats out Karov? I mean, that's exactly what the Mishnah says. So based on that kasha, Tosas breaks new ground, and he distinguishes between two types of Karov. What are those two types of Karov? Ari, can you help me out here? What are the two categories of Karov that the Mishnah in Teshach HaNuyos are only referring to one category of Karov, and Rabbi Hanina wants to break new ground and extend it to a whole new category of Karov? Anybody? Right, Kuruv the Muchach versus Kuruv the Lo Muchach. And obviously, the question arises, why is the meat in front of the non-kosher butcher stop called a Kuruv the Lo Muchach? Or the flip side of that question is, when do we have a Kuruv the Muchach upon which Rabbi Hanina says that we go Basar Rov despite the Kuruv the Muchach? So you've jacked up the Kurva from a low ebb Kurva to a high profile Kurva, and nevertheless, Rabbi Hanina remains loyal to the Rov, right? That's Rabbi Hanina. So, for example, Tosis comes up with a case where you're trying to determine whether this barrel of wine came from a city of Goyim or it came from a city of Yisraelim. And Tosin says, in that case, the Kurva is a Kurva Demuchach. But if, on the other hand, you know it came from this particular city, but you found the barrel of wine close to a non-Jewish home, but most of the homes in the city are Jewish, that becomes a Kurva Demuchach. The Chiddush of Rav Chanina is that despite the fact that you found a barrel of wine close to a non-Jewish city, which is what kind of kurva? Kurva the Muchach, again, you found it in the river close to a non-Jewish city. Nevertheless, we're going to calculate how much wine there is. And if the Jews are producing more wine, you remember we discussed this, that Rashi used to make wine. So then, says Rav Chanina, you can drink the wine despite the kurva de Muchach. Okay. Good. Now, let's just think about the case of Egla Rufa. When Rav Zeris says that the Egla Rufa as the source for Karov in Kol Torah Kula, that Karov beats out Rov, what kind of Karov are we dealing with? And let me just explain my question. If we're talking about a Karov of the Muchach, right, then we're really in the territory of Rabbi Hanina. No, it's the unique territory. If it's a Kurva de lo muchach, then even Rabbi Zera has a problem over here. Why? Because what does Rabbi Zera hold about a clash between Rov and Kurva de lo muchach? We go Basar Rov, because we have the Mishnah of Teshach HaNuyos. So let's write that down. The Mishnah of Teshach HaNuyos is addressing a case of Kurva de lo muchach against the Rov. Rov beats out Kurva de lo muchach. Even Rav Zeira accepts that principle. And now we have to ask the question, how would Rav Zeira deal with the fact that Kurva beats out Rov in the Havamina of Rav Zeira when he asked this question? Unless we assume that what's the nature of that Kurva? It's Kurva de lo muchach, correct? It's Kurva de lo muchach. But again, have we introduced yet... Okay, this is a parenthetical statement. Have we introduced yet Rub di Alma at this point in the original question of Reb Zera? In Reb Zera question number 1A, we haven't yet introduced Rub di Alma. We only introduced Rub di Alma in question Reb Zera 1B, if you follow what I mean. So right now, when we're dealing with Kurva against the cities that are close, we'll call them with the cities in the enclave, you know, in the immediate area. Remember the Tosfos Rid used the term Bisvivos HaChol.
Yeah, so then it'll be similar to the case to find.
And what kind of curve would that be?
The
Lomucha. So what should win out then if it's a curve of Lomucha? Even according to Rav Zera. So that's the Tosfos here. Tosfos says that Rav Zera 1A is a kasha on the Mishnah of Teshach HaNuyos. He says, Amas Nisa, the Teshach HaNuyos, Nami Avi Motzi L'Kshuye, El Amas Nisa, Ikel Shnuye, Bin Aleka, Ela. So why is Tosfos need the Ela now? What's the implicit question between the word that comes before Ela and the Ela, and that little space in between? Why is Tosfos unhappy with the fact that Reb Zera, in stage 1A, is asking Akasha on himself? But in general, I'm asking you, Rabbi Osai, even before you see the rest of the sugya, why is that a problem? You see, there are a number of things in this Gemara that are very strange. Just in terms of the general methodology of Shas, this sugya is very unique. Because when you see the word masiv following a statement by an Amora, as a universal rule, what does the word masiv mean? And I beg your pardon that I'm asking just, you know, questions I should ask a fourth grader, but it sometimes it pays to think about this. What does the word masiv mean?
Challenge.
To challenge someone because I think you are wrong. I mean, that this is the exception to the rule. The masiv Rav Zera, says Tosfos, is not a kasha on Rav Chanina. It's equally difficult according to everybody. Even Rav Zera would have to admit that Rav beats out a Kurva de la Muchach, and since in this case, where we have many cities surrounding the Cholol, we're trying to decide where did the Rotzeh come from, you've got yourself a situation of Kurva de la Muchach, right? Anything internal we said is Kurva de la Muchach, and therefore Rav should beat out Karav. So why do you bring the Egla Rufa, as the Torah points out, from the year Akrova? Why does Rav beat out Karav? So what does Tosfos do to patch up this hole? By the way, that's not the only thing that's strange about this Gemara. And we're going to have another sugi coming up on this daf, in which are we asking a theoretical question that never could or would happen in the world that we live in? Who learns the Gemara like that?
Rashi.
Rashi is going to interpret that, you know, there's a question here on the part of Rabbi Yirmiya, from a world that doesn't exist. And that's going to be an issue where the Torah, you know, the Torah recognizes the ability, the rights to ask such a question. Or no, do we only ask questions when they could cut ice, as we said, right? Okay, so that's another strange thing about this. There are a number of things in this Gemara that are very atypical. But let's get back to this. So how does Tosfos solve the problem, Masiv Rav Zera? What do you mean, Masiv Rav Zera? The question is, It boomerangs back into Rav Zera's face. He too is not free of this kasha. It's a steer between the Mishnah Teisha Chanuyos and the halach that Rav beats out Karov if it's what kind of Karov? Kurva de la Muchach. So how does Tosfos get out of that? Everybody look inside the Tosfos. I'm just drilling you to make sure that you have really good shot in Tosfos. So that's important. No?
Yeah.
I mean, what's more important than learning how to read a Tosfos? True. But sometimes it goes, you know, hand in hand. Tosfos is bothered, that's what we're claiming. Right. I don't know how he solves this problem. But how does Rav Zera attack Rav Chanina with a question
which ends up hurting himself?
Yeah, that's against him as well. He can't defend this Parsha of Egla Rufa against the Rov. Rov certainly beats out Karov, and yet the Torah insists on bringing the Egla from the Ira Krova. How do we make any sense out of that? But you're missing one point. You're explaining Tosfos' answer to this question. Is that what you're up to?
No,
you're not up to that. That's what Tosfos is going to break new grounds on that question, Mignon, right? You know what I'm saying? Because the answer to your question is yes and yes. Both are true at the same time. A and not A are true at the same time. It's going to depend on another factor. But now, up front, Tosfos is assuming that the kurva of Egla Rufa in the Pasuk is a kurva de lo muchach. And therefore, Rov should certainly what?
Certainly
beat out the kurva. Why does the Torah say bring it from the Ira Krova? Rov should beat it out.
It's not.
So it's not a kasha on Rav Chanina. Don't blame Rav Chanina for the kasha. Yeah, you got a toothache. You're gonna blame it on him because he gave you candy to eat? I mean, you ate the candy.
It's those answers, the follow up, then it's the follow up that we want.
Okay? Excellent. That's what I wanted to hear. Tosfos says, Ella, what's going on here? Amasnisa ikalishnudi bidaleka. I could easily reinterpret the parish of Egla Rufa, no sweat, in such a way that it will not contradict our premise, our principle that Rov beats out Karov. How would I answer that question, as the Israelis say, b'chik? Because you're not familiar with that phrase. Okay, that's it's slang in Israel. You know, b'chik means easily. You know, I have an easy answer to that question. Bidaleka. Bidaleka means that there's no city in close proximity of the Cholol that has more people in it than the Ira Krova. Is that correct? But what problem of Rov is going to haunt us? Rav Olam, I mean, you can tell me that there's no city in the vicinity that has a larger population says, no, you're Gdola, but you can't deny the Rove of the Olam. Again, whatever that Rove of the Olam is, Tosfos Rid learns that the Rove of the Olam is the largest city out there somewhere. You know, this one city out there, if not 100, that is larger in population than the Iraq Rova. That's undeniable. Or the other Rishonim say that we can integrate, you'll see the Rimigash, and other Rishonim say we can integrate all the world population to create a Rove that clashes with the Karov of the number of people in the Iraq Rova. Fine. So that you can't. Ah, says Tosfos, the Kash of Lazel Basar Ruba di Alma is addressed to whom? And only to whom? To Rav Chanina. Why? What happened now with the Karov, Yamin? What happened now? The Karov all of a sudden got upgraded. Did it ever happen to you? Yeah, I've been flying for like, you know, how many years, but one time I got an upgrade. And then I wish I'd sit with the plebes in the cabin, because they sat me down in this business chair. First, I didn't know exactly how to use the chair. It was like really complicated. And secondly, it turned out that the way they put me right in the middle, there were people coming in and out from all directions. You know, the business class is a little bit overrated. I don't know if it's worth the money. But okay, I got an upgrade. So what am I going to do? Tell her, you know, thanks for no thanks? I got it for free. Okay, so now we're going to upgrade the Kurva de lo Muchach and convert it into a Kurva de Muchach. So that now the Kash of the Gemara of Leza Basar Ruba di Alma is directed at whom? At Rabbi Chanina. How does Tosfos pull this rabbit out of his hat? And all of a sudden, the Kurva de lo Muchach magically turns into Kurva de Muchach. And by the way, it's the same Kurva. And what's the answer?
There
you go. Answer you have. That kurva is relative. Kurva is not independent. It's not objective. You want to define it as a kurva de muchach or a kurva de lo muchach, you have two possibilities. The answer is, what's it up against? If it's up against one kind of robe, that's your classical robe, then it can become no better than a kurva de lo muchach. But if it's up against some sort of far out Rove, pardon here, namely Nezel Basar Ruba di Alma, then relative to that Rove, Kurva becomes a Kurva de Muchach. Do we see that? Again, just the mechanics of Tosfos. Tosfos is of the opinion that that very same Karov, again, we didn't move the Chol, we didn't move the city, everything remained exactly where it was. But the Kurva changed its complexion. It went from being Kurva de lo muchach all the way up to Kurva de muchach, because where is this other city that has a Rove de Alma? Is it anywhere in the vicinity of the Cholol? No. So what the Karav tells you, what the Torah tells you is, don't stretch your arm out to some far off place. Look at the place you're in now. We can create an enclave, a circle of cities, and now, if you want to go beyond that enclave of cities and pull out a city from who knows where, that Karov becomes a Kurva de Muchach. Oh, Kurva de Muchach, Reb Chanina, you're in trouble. Because if the Torah in Egla Rufa is talking about a case of Kurva de Muchach, then even though it's a Kurva de Muchach, Afal Pichain, what should beat that Kurva? Rove. And does this Rove have to exist? I guess without mountains, eventually the whole globe is flat. Does the Kurva have to exist in a flat world? I don't mean that the earth is flat, right? That's not what I meant. I'm saying, does the Rove exist? I meant to say, what did I say, Kurva?
Yeah.
No, cross that out. Does the Rove exist?
Yeah,
it has to exist. That's a premise. Unless you had an ear crow that had 51% of the population of the world. So that doesn't exist. We don't have one single city that has such a large population. And Mela, you're left with the absolute premise, unquestionable, that there's a Ruba di Alma. So what do we do with the Pasha Begla Rufa? We must conclude, therefore, that Karo beats out Rav. Rav Chanina, how are you going to handle that? So what does Rav Chanina introduce into the equation? A mountain range, right? Okay, so if you don't have a mountain range, Rav Chanina's in trouble. Thank God for mountains. You know, I really think Rav Chanina, when he said to Tehillim, Esa Einai El Harim, he had extra kavana. Because if you're not Esa Einai El Harim, Rav Chanina, you have to rip an entire parasha of the Torah. And you can't do that. You can't rip a parasha of the Torah.
Would that include water? Would that include like water, if there's like an island, things like that?
an island.
It's the same thing as mountains.
I see you're in a summer mood already, huh? Okay.
Yeah,
Dominican Republic. Okay. So let's think about this island. Right?
It's the reason why the mountain range is because no one really gives compliments.
Maybe it depends where the ships are at. So if you're on a cruise, maybe who cares if you're traveling against the water, right? A lot of roads come on cruises, you better be careful.
Pirates.
Yossi, did you want to say something before?
Yeah, I was just confused because I thought we had a certain definition in regards to what a kar of demuchach is.
Yeah. If you have a definition for a kar of demuchach is, I'd like to hear it. Because I've been thinking about that for a long time and I'm having a lot of trouble defining the difference between a kar of demuchach and a kar of lo muchach.
So I don't necessarily have an actual definition, but I didn't think it was definitely
subjective. Wait a minute, instead of subjective, I'm sorry, if I said the word subjective, let me substitute a different word, relative. Yeah. In other words, it's relative to the robe that you're up against, you know.
Right, I didn't think that it was even relative to any robe, I thought that there was a certain definition.
Right. So I'm saying, kurva de muchach means it tells you that it's from the vicinity, you're not from long range. That's called kurva de muchach. But if you're dealing with two cities within that close proximity, then mechatesi, how do you know that it came from one city just because it's a little closer to the other? Maybe the guy led the rotzeach left the city, you know, he was on his way to another city, he went an extra foot or two.
No,
that's already a kurva de lo muchach.
I thought we have the guidelines of chutz for mitel chamishimama to determine what possibility.
Well, let's think about that. You know, can we come back to your question in a few minutes? I'll tell you why, because that's going to be Nepal. So, but you really you have to promise me you'll come back and ask your question when we get into Nepal. But Blineda, right? But before we get to Nepal, let's just think about this. You found a chol. He came from one of the cities. What does the Torah assume a priori? That he came from one of the close cities. There's a lot of traffic in this area outside the cities from the cities. The cities surround this area. It's what we call it an open range. This open range is generally inhabited by people from the cities that circle this range. True, there are passers-by, there are travelers that come from outside the city, but the Torah doesn't even reckon with them. So that rove of people outside the city, again, if I'm going with Reb Zera and the simple pshat of Teisha Chanuyos, that rove doesn't really register. The Karov registers big time. You know, it's no longer flip the coin, according to Reb Zera, between Karov and rove, unless you, Reb Zera, Reb Hanina, step in with a brand new definition of rove, in which rove becomes the king and the supreme ruler, then barring that, I would say that the Torah says Aslina Basakarov. Don't even raise the question of Ruva Diyama. That's Rav Zera's approach. And Rav Zera thinks that in the Parash of Egla Rufa, it says so in just so many words. It's explicit in the Parash of Lehejim Bakra that once you have this kind of Karov telling you that it's from one of these inner cities, in the inner sanctum of this Chol, don't even raise the question of Ruva Diyama. Rov is not going to get you anywhere. That's Rav Zera's opinion. Where does Rov reign supreme according to Rav Zera? When you're within the city, and you've got a number of different places, right? I'm sorry, you're within the enclave, or in the city in the case of Teish Chanuyos, and you've got a number of different places that it could have come from, the meat or the chalal, then your Karov is a second-rate Karov. Then Rove reigns supreme. But once you're going outside of an enclave and you're raising the possibility that it didn't come from Karov, then you're undermining what the Torah said about Karov. What the Torah told you about Karov, says Reb Zera, is stick within the Karov. Which city within the Karov? Which Chanus within the city? That's already a Rove. That's where Rove steps in. But according to you, Reb Hanina, you introduced Rove as the kingpin. Rov doesn't count out to anything, not even to a kurva de muchach. So what do you do with the parasha of Egla Rufa? There's definitely a Ruva de Alma. That's the only answer the Gemara can come up with. Now look at Tosus inside, and Tosus says Ella. Let's read it again. Ella, the second line of Masiv. Amas nisa ikal lishnuye v'deleka v'su lekal lishnuye the nasal basa Ruva de Alma, because Ruva de Alma against Karov is what kind of Karov now? Again, whenever you see Ruva the Alman, it's against Karov. What kind of Karov are you dealing with? Kurva de Muchach. And here's where Tosfos introduces his relativity theory. Dilagavi ruva di alavi kurvas zu ha'ir kurva de muchach. So that's fine. We have a perfect coincidence of the Mishnah and the parish of Egla Rufa Bala Rab Chanina, who has Rov as supreme. The afil bekurva de muchach halacha charov parak shapir. And now we understand, we justify the word what? The Yaman, as you said before, the word massive, right? Okay, so there are no other large cities within the Svivos Hachol, but there certainly is a Rov out there.
How can you just say that? How can you say that anytime you mention the Alma, then you're going to assume it's the case of Karb Mucha? It's like sidestepping the whole question, no?
I don't know. If you have an exception to the rule, maybe we'll study it. But until I see otherwise, I'm going to assume it's a rule. Because again, what was written in the parsha of Egla Rufa according to Rav Zera? How did he read the parsha of Egla Rufa? He read it as the following: that the Torah doesn't want you to come up with a possibility that it came from outside. In fact, that's what the word karav means. Again, karav doesn't mean one specific city. Because again, if there's going to be another city that's somewhat karov, meaning it's in the enclave, it's in the club, and it has a rov in terms of its population, then we're going to go basaruba. Now that's the Mishnah Teish Chanuyot. But once you stretch your arm out and start raising the possibility that, wait a minute, maybe it came from the rov ha'olam, and it didn't even come from the krovim, then the parsha of Egla Rufa just slaps you in the face. Smacks you in the face. That's Tosis Mason. What about Tosis Dira Maskel Nepal? Do you see that? Tosis Nepal. That's our next project.
So, when the Gemara says, right, so when Rav Zera asks that question, he says, Bidaleka, so that's probably him answering his own question, right? It's a question himself?
Maybe.
And then when we answer Rishavit Ben Aharim, then that would be Rav Chanina answering.
Yeah. Okay. So now we get to Roman numeral number 2, and that's the second series of questions based on our Mishnah here of Nepal. So the Mishnah in the Reisha says that you give back the gozel that you found to the nearest Shovach, as long as you found it within a radius of what? Of 50 Amma. Are there any other Shovachos within the 50 Amma? L'chora there are, right? Because you're going to postulate this din of Karov, and if that be the case, maybe one of those shovchos within 50 amo, although it's not as close to where you found the nipol as this one, as this shovach, but at least that other shovach has an advantage. What advantage does that have? It has the advantage of being a rov. That's the Gemara's question. Now we have to analyze whether this question is directed to Rav Zera as well as Rav Chanina, or only to Rabbi Chanina. Okay? So again, let's go through the Gemara's question once more. How did the Mishnah of Nepal in the Reisha establish that we give it back to the Bala Shovach? What about another Shovach that has more birds in it than this Shovach?
We're saying there's more than one Shovach instead of 50 Amos.
I don't know. Maybe I misled you. Okay? I was hoping that you would stand up and argue with me on that. Which, okay, Norm, you did that. That's good. You know, if you're going up for a layup, I'm not going to block you. I'm telling you, you're a solid citizen. You know, really solid. All those Californians are solid. How do they grow them like that down there? Do you ever see the vines over there and the grapes out there? It's like wild.
No, but that would answer Rove. That would bring the question of Rove into the Mishnah, if you assume that there's more than one Shovach inside.
Oh, so let's look at Tosis Nepal. Take a look, Noam, at Tosis Nepal. Nepal, Nimtzu B'toch HaMishim, Amas Nisa, L'teisha Chanuyos, Lo Motzi L'Mifrach. Interesting. Whereas Tosis was willing to accept, in Roman numeral number 1, the kasha of Masiv Rav Zeir from Egla Rufa, that kasha might be on Rav Zeir himself in the initial step, which again, it was a jump off, it was a springboard to the main kasha of Zlina Basaru with the Alma, and Nesa Basaru with the Alma. Here, Tosis is of the opinion that you would never have a kasha from the Mishnah of Teish Chanuyos. You know, we certainly understand why this Karov, in the case of Nepal, in the Reish of the Mishnah, would beat out Rove, even though In the Mishnah of Teisha Chanuyos, Rov beats Hakara. Now, what's the only way of explaining why this Reisha awards the Nipol to the Shovach because of its Din Karov, overlooking or disqualifying the fact that there's another Shovach that has more birds in it? How are you going to square that with Teisha Chanuyos, which tells us is, that's his agenda for the
Which means that the other Shovach is almost like that.
Now, again, if we're within the enclave and we're not coming from the outside, what kind of kurva is that? Kurva the Mukhach. So how could we possibly explain that the Reisha of our Mishnah is dealing with a kurva the Lo Mukhach, so that it squares with the Mishnah of Teish Chanuyos? And what's the answer? No, your answer. Where is the second Shovach that has, that boasts a gigantic bird population?
It's outside of the
50 Amah. Take a look at Tosus. Tosus says the following: Dibra maschil nipol, we must avamas nisa the teisha kanuis lo motzi lemifrach the hacha havi kurva demuchach. Why? The high, the havi mish. Excuse me. The hochavi kurva de muchach the havi mishovach zeh. Why? The havi tolchamish. Vahanach the nefishi. Where are the shovchos with a great deal of birds and a large population? Havi chutz lechamish. Ah, now we got a case. Says Tosfos, if you have two shovchos within 50 amah, then you might be dealing with a kurva de muchach. Where is the second shovach that vies against this shovach? I'm sorry, what did I just say? Let me go over it one more time. We're talking about a kurva de muchach. Right. Why is it a kurva de muchach? Because the second shovach with the large population is
outside
the 50. What does Tosfos teach me now? Had the second shovach with a large bird population been within the 50 amah, what would have been the din? Aslina Basaruba returned the nipol to the rechoka. According to whom? Oh, only according to Rechanina, right?
No, according to both.
Even according to Rav Zeir. He said, I ask you questions, you look at my face, you think I'm serious. And you, I could probably sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. So again, this kasha would be a kasha even according to Rav Zeir. Does everybody have that? Because once we jump in with a second shovach and a rov within the enclave, correct? What does that do to the kurva? It lowers it down to a subcategory of kurva de lo mukhach. Again, it's the same rule that we saw in Teish Kanuyos. And it's the same rule that we saw in Egla Rufa. When you're within the enclave, and what's the enclave here in our case of Nepal? 50 Amah. When you're within the 50 Amah, then the kurva is, you know, kind of like a less rarer. You know, instead of flipping a coin, we'll go bust a curl. But now that the Rechoka within the enclave has a rove, then rove beats out kurva de lo mukhach. And that's true even according to whom? According to Rav Zeir. So halacha lemaisa, we can paskin one thing. You know, with all the cases, at least we can get clarity on one case. If you have two shovchos within 50 am, which shovach has the right claim to this nipol?
The rove.
Good.
How do we fit this example, this definition of kurva de muchach in the case of the with the yayin?
This would be like a case where you found a barrel of wine in the city,
yeah,
in front of a non-Jewish home.
Yeah.
That's called kurva de lo muchach. That's called kurva de lo muchach. And therefore, if there's rove yayin in the city, you could drink the wine even according to Rav. You remember that?
Yeah.
Tosfos says even according to Rav. Rav maintains like Rav Zeira that rove beats out kurva only in the case of a kurva de lo muchach. So the Teisha Chanuyos is a kurva de lo muchach, and the rove beats out the karov. If you find a barrel within the city, even though it's in front of a non-Jewish home, within the enclave, that's called a kurva de lo muchach, and rove beats it out. If you find two cities within the enclave, and one city is closer to the chol, but the other city has a large population of people, then who do you assume is chayev in the Egla Rufa? The rove. Why? Because that curve is a curve of the lo muchach. Whenever we're on the inside, we're on the inner sanctum, and it's between A or B with inside, that's called curve of the lo muchach, and rove beats it out. Why does the Gemara then attack Rabbi Chanina from our ratio of Nipol? apparently the case is, where was the second, the competing shovach? The competitive shovach was outside of 50 Amma. What kind of kurva do we have? We have kurva the mucha. Again, I don't know why 50 Amma. Don't ask me that question. Is that your question, Yossi? Because then I don't even want to dream about that. You know, 50 Amma, the Gemara later on is going to say, is halach in what?
Medada.
In Medada. But we don't know anything about Medada. That's classified. So if we don't know anything about Medada, what's 50 Amma? So Tosu says he has a Gemara daf Chav Gimel, Omer Aleph. What's on Chav Gimel, Omer Aleph? Another din of 50 Amma. You know, it's mind-boggling. I don't know if this is coincidental. This a whole new bird psychology, not has nothing to do with Medada, and yet the buck stops at 50 Amma. The bird stops at 50 Amma. What's that? So what other bird psychology do we have? Yoshua. Food. How far does a bird fly in the winter? No, I'm sorry. How far does the bird fly in order to get food?
50
Amma. 50 Amma. It's Gemara daf Tov Gimel Amud Aleph. Don't ask me. It's hard to believe that this is coincidental. That a bird will fly, we're talking about a flying bird, up to 50 Amma to look for food, and a medadev will only be medadev 50 Amma to wobble its way around. It's a little bit strange. I don't know, it's not coincidental. Good, so now let's go over the Gemara's cash. So the Gemara's cash is now, according to you, Reb Chanina, that you claim that Rov beats out even a kurva demuchach. What do we have now, Reisha? What kind of kurva? Again, we're up against the shalot that's outside of 50. What kind of kurva do we have? Kurva de muchach is then rov should win the day. According to you?
No,
I'm saying according to you, Rabbi Chanina, rov should win the day. Bish lema l'didi nicha. I learned the Mishnah glatt. No problem. Why? Because kurva de muchach, as we saw in the parsha of Egla Rufa, if it's muchach, beats out what? Beats out the rove of Ruben the Alma. Again, keep in mind Ruben the Alma, right? You have to make sure you understand that, because if it's rove within the cities inside the enclave, then even Rav Zeir agrees that rove beats out Karv. But the Pash of Egla Rufa is setting up a collision between Karov, meaning within the city, within the enclave of cities, the cluster of cities, and Ruben the Alma. In that case, Karov beats it out because you got a Karov of the Mucha. So therefore, Abzera says, I understand that Mishnah beautifully. Our Mishnah is a reflected image, a mirror image, of the case of Egla Rufa, with regard to Ruben the Alma, or of the case of Teisha Chanuyos, where Rov beats out Karv only because the Karv is a Kurva de Lo Muchach. Here, Kurva, in the case of a Shovach, beats out the Rov, says Reb Zera, because the Kurva is what? A Kurva de Muchach. Beautiful, no? Everything. I don't know if you get excited about this, but all of a sudden, like the pieces of the puzzle beginning to fit into place. Let's see the end of the Tosus. Tosus says, "What about Ruba the Alma?" Looks like where am I? Tosus. Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, Liel Amrina de Karsayu. B'chamishim Amma Malion. Tosus is compelled to introduce this Gemara because what's the 50 Amma? How does the 50 Amma generate a kurva de muchach if you're not dealing with medade? So Tosus has to introduce another psychological principle that once again limits the flight of the birds to within 50 Amma. So that's pretty good. But according to you, Reb Chanina, the rove will beat out even a kurva de muchach. So what is Gemara answer? Bidaleka. And now Tosus is bothered in Dibra Maska Bidaleka. I mean, that's not really on our list, but once we're here, well, what about Ruben the Alma? Well, what question in the Gemara is completely omitted? And in that sense, once again, the Gemara is asymmetrical. Symmetrical, because again, in Roman rule number one, when we were attacking Reb Chanina from Egla Rufa, what was the question that really bothered our minds?
Uh-huh.
Ruben the Alma. That was the question that attacked Rabbi Chanina by the Gergel, and he had to force himself to introduce, as we said, El Aharim. But here, oddly enough, when we get to Nepal, the Gemara completely drops the ball on Ruben the Alma. So Tosus is compelled to find some sort of a chetimtza or ukimta that would explain why Ruben the Alma is not a factor to be reckoned with. And what's that? Shloshim Ris. There's no even if birds are going for their flights, you know, they're really, you know, they're on vacation, so to speak. They're moving, they're migrating, I don't know what they're doing. They're only within Shloshim Ris. No, there are no Shofkos within Shloshim Ris, or whatever. Or we'll get into that later. That's Tosfos Bit Alek. Oh. Now the Gemara says, if you have no other Shofkos, so what do you do in this case? There are no other Shofkos vying, claiming ownership on this Nipo. So how many Shofkos do we have that can really claim only one? No. So what does the Mishnah say? That if it's outside of 50 Amah,
then
what do you do with
it?
Right, then you pocket it for yourself. Why not give it to the Baal Shofkos? I mean, he's the only one who has a claim to it. If you had a Rove,
yeah,
what could you claim? How would the Rove support your claim if you found it and you want to wave the banner of Rove?
You could say that Ruv of the Alma could be walking by. And
who is the Ruv of the Alma?
The travelers.
Well, okay, Tosfos doesn't say travelers, other Rishonim say travelers. What does Tosfos operate with? Kutim or... or Hefker, he has possibilities. But now that we've eliminated those possibilities, so there's no other Shovach around. So by definition, by default, this bird must have come for that one single Shovach. So why do you have a right to pocket it? I mean, Ruvein, the Baal Shovach, is coming and he's claiming it's mine.
It's not claiming the Mucha, I thought.
So what?
Because why?
There's no Rove. You've just eliminated Rove.
How do we eliminate Rove?
Bit Alekha, there's no Shovachs. It's a barren area.
It's
not a good place for chicken coops.
Not a good place for people to travel?
Yeah, it's not a good place for chicken. Travels, I don't know. You know, Tosa says that we don't expect the traveler to drop a coop. This is a bird that flew out of its coop. How many coops do you have? What are your potential candidates? You got one candidate. You know what I mean? If no one would run against Obama, I think he would win by default. I don't think that's going to happen, but I think he's going to win by default anyway. It's just there are too many candidates against him. But anyway, so the point is that you should give it back to this Shovach. Give it back to this Shovach, correct? And that's the next tosis that we want to see. The Idalek Achrini Vadai Me'ahu Nofil. The Bishlemi could Nofish Minei if we would accept Rove, but that would be suicidal for Abkhanin and the Reisha. Is Asi Shafir, then it's Nicha. So according to me, says Rav Zeira, I'm in the clear. I understand why the Avi Shal Motzik could go. The Avi Hahu the Nafish Shal Hefker O Shal Kusim. I will hash the Deleka. There are no what? No vying Shofchos. So it's a done deal. By default, Obama wins the election, right? So give it back to the Baal Shofch. Why are you pocketing it? It's not Hefker. Vadeh Mehu Nafo. So again, just to summarize, whereas in the series of questions in Roman numeral number 1 from Egla Rufa, the first question was a universal question. It wasn't specifically attacking Rabbi Hanina. In the second series of questions from our mission of Nepal, these are specifically directed towards whom? Towards Rabbi Hanina. And why is that? Because the Nepal case is a kurva demuchach. So Rav Chanina is forced to eliminate the Rove. Once you eliminate the Rove, what are you left with? One single Shovach. So how can you possibly pocket it, give it to the Baal HaShovach? Now in the second half of Tosfos V'Idaleka, he raises a possibility to learn the Mishnah and construct the Mishnah in a way that would make sense according to Rav Chanina, implying that the Gemara has no right, it's not justified in rejecting Rabbi Hanina. That's going to be the second half of this Tosfos for Eid
Deleka. You learn Deleka and something else entirely. I mean, we say Deleka, that doesn't mean there aren't any other Shofos in the area, but Deleka means it's not the Shofos that's bigger. Mm. Meaning not even Shofos.
Why? What did he say?
Read Tosfos, he says.
Yeah, he himself raises that possibility, no?
And then the next Tosos. So first he says the case is Bidaleka means there is no Shovach there. And he says, and you can't even teach that they're equal. Because we already learned about what happened.
He's gonna address that. Give Shalom another minute.
So if we address that, then what are we doing? Because that's already Rove. That's nothing to do with Karv at all. That's Rove wins.
No, he's saying if all the other Shovachs are equal in population.
if all other shows.
So Shalom, I thought you were going to point out the next half of Tosis.
Well, I told him about Eagle, but then he said, what about Rove?
Oh, you're asking about Rove? I lost you. If you're asking about Rove,
I don't ask you. I got it.
As long as you guys worked it out, yeah. I'm okay, you know.
Shalom, boys.
Oh, nice. Let them fight it out amongst themselves. Get Rabbi Waxman here as the referee. Okay. So now let's look at Tosus Divamel Mitzvah. So now we get to Roman numeral number 3. Toshma Nimtza Ben Shnei Shovchos Karv Lezeh Shalom V'Karv Lezeh Shalom V'Yachal Gav D'Chad Minayim Nofesh Michavrei. Who is this question addressed to? If you forgot, take a look again at Tosus Divamel Mitzvah. Matzo Ben Shnei Shovchim. You see the re over there? What kind of karav is it?
The karav lomucha.
Karav lomucha.
And of course, also a question on the Mishnah.
Excellent. So now we have a very interesting scenario. We've got, if you take a look at the overall structure, the picture of the Gemara, if you chart it out in a flowchart, what you have is one series of questions in Egla Rufa, the first question of which is an attack that's universal. It's not isolated onto Rav Kanina. It's a kasha based on the Mishnah in Teisha Chanuyos. Then you have the second section of series of questions, which is based on our Mishnah of Nepal. I mean, when I say the Mishnah of Nepal, I mean the Resha of the Mishnah. And there, the question is on Rav Kanina, specifically on Rav Kanina, because we're dealing with a Kruv of the Muchach. And then in the third round, when we get to the safe of the Mishnah of Nepal of Shnei Shofkin, Nitzvah Shnei Shofkin, we go back to the structure of the first round, and once again, imaging the first round, we have a kasha that's universal that would create a problem, a contradiction, even for Abzer himself, even for the Mishnah itself of Teisha Chanuyos, because here, Ben Shnei Shofkos, we're talking about what? Kurva Delo Muchach. Why is Shnei Shofkos in the Sefer, Kurva de lo Muchach?
It's all in there.
Because there's another one where?
In the Amma.
Or, I was hoping you wouldn't give me the answer within 50 Amma. Let's go back to your original answer. There's another one there. What's there?
A larger one outside.
No. It doesn't have to be within 50 Amma. What does another one there mean?
30 years.
It means there's another one in close proximity. You know, so you're just deciding between A or B. You don't have that natural boundary that you need in order to set up a Kurva de Muchach. So I don't know if it's within 50 Amma or they're both outside of 50 Amma. Let's look at the Tosfos inside. Tosfos says, Mitzvah ben shnei shovchim, v'af agav d'chad minayu nafish. So the Gemara is asking, why not use Rove? This Rove should be that Karov according to everyone, even according to Abzera. Why? Omri dach parchavi motzim mifracham aslis in teish chanuyos, the high kurva de lo muchachu. Why? He works out the case. The two possible cases. The iavi tocham mishim lezeh. If you're saying that you find the Nepal at a proximity which is within 50 Amma, is havinami tocham mishim amma lezeh? Then I'll tell you that the other Shovach, which is a candidate for Karov, and we're going to have to measure the two and see which is more Karov, is also within 50 Am. V'yavi chutz l'chamishim Am l'zeh. And if you're going to tell me you found the Nepal in the Sefer outside of a 50 Am radius, or circumference, havi nami chutz l'chamishim l'zeh. Then the other one is also chutz l'chamishim. So again, if it's a toss-up between two Shovchos, and one is a little bit more curved than the other, what kind of curve do we have?
Well, it's not Chavish Mama, it would go to the Motzo, it would go to the Founder anyways. Even if it doesn't make a difference if there's two of them, but if the Nibble is
well, no, that's only true, Binyamin, if the other Shovach belongs to Hefkar Tekusin. But what happens, you have Reuben and Shimon, they're both Yidden and Pais and Buds, right? And they're both vying for this one Nibble. So then we have to give it to the curve the mission establishes. But one of them is larger than the other. Right, so you see that Karav beats out Rov. And you see that Karav beats out Rov even in the case of what? What kind of kurva? Say it again?
I mean...
Well, I didn't hear what you said. I think he had a second thought there. Even if it's a kurva de... No good? Oh, don't tell me I lost you. Okay. Again, you're talking about two shofars, both owned by Jews, and they're close to each other, and they're both close to the meepole. We're going to take out a measuring rod and establish that one of the two shofars is closer, let's call it Reuven, and therefore we're going to give it to Reuven, or it's closer to Shimon. Where are these two shofars? Tosfos says it matters not. Either they're within 50 amah both, or they're outside of 50 amah both. Correct? And here, we're not even interested in counting the number of birds in the shofar. So you may have more birds in one shofar, even though it's rechoka, and less birds in the krova, and we're going to give it to the krova. So what do we see? We that car beats out Rav. But what kind of curve do we have? Is this cash on Rav Kmina, or is it cash even on a Mishnah?
Cash on the Mishnah.
Because it's a curva?
Lomucha.
Does everybody see why it's a curva lomucha? It always is a curva lomucha if you're within the same bounds. You follow? So this is called a curva lomucha. What sets up a curva the muchach? A curve of the muchach is when you have some sort of boundary or natural boundary, whatever it might be. It doesn't have to be a boundary that you see with your eyes, you know, big machnitza with the kosel. That's for the first parak of Abbas, the kosel. But as long as there's some machnitza over here, then we're going to assume it came from X. Why are we going to assume it came from X? Because that's the parsha of Karov. The parsha of Karov and Egla Rufa says, don't bring in a city from outside the Svivos Hachol, even though that city may have a rove in its on its behalf, because the Mishnah and Rabbi Chanit and Rabbi Zera maintain the position that once you set up this boundary, this is called by Svivos Ha'ir, we called it, right? No, actually Svivos Hachol, then this natural boundary, which I don't know what it is, again, don't ask me where it is or what it is, but whatever that natural boundary is, this rove is vying up against what kind of karov? If it's outside the boundary, a kurva de mucha. And therefore, the Mishnah and Rav Zera maintain that such a rov falls shy of the power to confront a karov, and as leader bus a karov, and that's indeed the paradigm of karov, the parish of Egla Rufa. In this case of Matzav and Shnei Shofchim, both Shofchim are within the same territory. It matters not whether they're within the 50 amma or they're outside the 50 amma, but whatever it is, they're equal in the eyes of the law. So therefore, Rov should determine what goes on. Even though there is a Karov, but that's a Kurva de Mucha. The Kurva de Lomucha. If it's Kurva de Lomucha, Rov beats it out. In the Reish of the Mishnah, on the other hand, the Reish of the Mishnah, what do we have between X and Y, says Tosfos? We got a boundary. What's the boundary? The 50 amma. So this is within 50 amah, this is outside of 50 amah. What kind of kurva is that? Kurva de mucha. And in such a case, everybody would agree that kurva, no, I'm sorry, that would be, excuse me, what I meant to say was that would be the machlokas between what? Between Rav Zera and Rabbi Chanina. And that's why the Gemara quotes the Mishnah of Nepal, the ratio of the Mishnah of Nepal, as a proof for Rav Zera against Rabbi Chanina. That's what Tosfos said in the Divra Maschil Nepal. He says, "Amasnisa the Teisha Chanuyus lo matzi mifrach," because this is a curve of the muchach, because one shavach is within 50 amah, the other shavach is outside of 50 amah.
I think he asked this before, but I mean, we talked about this like in the beginning of the Shiga, that it's hard to say that the case where it says if there's two shofars there is that they're both outside 50 amah, because then automatically, like, you can't have, like, you can't say, like, well, this shofar is 100 miles away and this shofar is 100 miles away, so even though the matzo found it, right, it's going to go to one of them. Like, it's obviously just wants the matzo, like, it wants the finder if they're both outside 50 amah.
Right, but Tosfos has this business that as long as we're dealing with flying birds, then we give it a larger span called Shloshim Ris. You remember that?
Right, yeah.
So we've got the 50 amma of a bird looking for food. We can have the 50 amma of the Medadid, which is coming around the corner. And then we have the Shloshim Ris of birds flying through the air, you
but
know, migrating,
but
bird migration.
So this thing of Shnei Shokin is talking about flying, or?
Yeah.
So then we have to mention 50 amma.
So again, if we're talking about flying birds, and one is within 50 amah and the other is outside of 50 amah, then you've got a contradiction to the Mishnah itself, the Mishnah of Teisha Chanuyos, because because that's going to be a korban de muchach. The reason why Tosfos wants to set it up that you have two shofchos within 50 am, or two shofchos outside of 50 am, is in order to reduce that kurva to a kurva de lo muchach, so that now there's no question on Reb Zeira on the Mishnah, it's bishlein l'dinicha, you've got a problem.
Right, but I'm saying the 50 am in terms of flying is irrelevant, like it's just a normal number. If it's Madonna, then I understand that 50 am is a relevant number. But for flying, you look at 30 reis, so 50 am doesn't really mean anything.
Right, again, that's... Oh, you're asking about Nesel Bas Ruba the Alma? What are you asking about? Again, we have two shofchos. What's the case? We have two shofchos outside of 50 Alma, this case?
Or even the first one, that it's... That
this case is one in, one out?
Right, and you said that we're talking about flying. So if you're talking about flying, then you're saying 50 Alma shows...
This bird inside the 50 Alma is looking for food.
Right.
This bird is not looking for food. Right? I mean, I'm saying the shofchos... Let me put it this way. The shofchos in this shofch, start again. The gozlos within this shofch that's outside of 50 amah would not land in this point in order to look for food. And therefore, we assume, even before we go into bird migration calculation, we assume that the bird is looking for food. So you're right about one important point, that when we set up a kurva de muchach, then we look at the first stage, you know, the first place to go when you ask about how the bird or why the bird left the shovel is for food. So your 50 amma definitely bumps off the shloshim ris.
Right.
That you made a very good point.
Right.
Okay. So let's just see if we can wrap this up now. Tibi Amaskel Mitzol, right? So that's where we were holding. And let's see where we end here. Oh, Tosa has an interesting point here. In the name of the Rashba, and he says he doesn't understand how the Gemara could even raise the issue of Rov, because you have a Mechtal Mechtal case which says Yachloku, and the Re says Lutameh. Fine. Now, who could tell me what's the Machlokus here between Rav Yirmi and the Chacham? Rav Yirmi wants to know what happens if the bird is found with 1 foot within 50 amma and 1 foot outside 50 amma. We're already in the medadeg mode. The Mishnah's interpreted as medadeg. Belineta will talk about that tomorrow. I just want to jump ahead of ourselves a little bit in the last 5 minutes of Shir and ask you a question. Why are the Chacham so fiercely insulted and object so ferociously, you know, ballistically against Rav Yirmi's kash? Why do they rise up in battle against Rav Yirmi? I mean, so the bird, the little bird, found itself, you know, one leg outside of 50 am. Well, what's so terrible about that?
Because he's saying something impossible.
Speak loud if you can.
He's saying something impossible. He's saying something that won't happen.
Exactly, it won't happen. But Rabbeinu Tam says it does happen. How does he know that it could happen, that you land on the boundary line, on the board, on the, you know, in tennis I guess you call it, on the outline, right? You with 1 foot in and 1 foot out. How could it happen? I'll prove to you that it happens. Where do I see it in the
Mishnah?
So based on Mechtzal Mechtzal, Rabbeinu Tam completely rejects Rashi's interpretation. That's an argument between a grandson and a grandfather. Correct? Because what's the premise that Rashi's operating with? That Rabbi Yirmi's question is theoretical but not real, not concrete? That's not so. The Mishnah itself addresses a question of a bird that's found exactly equidistant between 2 points. So you see that a bird, you know, we're really, really exact and precise about where the bird is located, and it might be located in a place that we can't define whether it belongs here or belongs there. But it's got 1 foot in and 1 foot out. So where is it? Is it out or is it in? Meaning that according to Rashi's interpretation of Yirmi's fault was that he violated the principle in Shas called E'efshar Litzamtzem. There's nothing absolutely precise in this universe. It reminds me of something. Have you ever studied Zeno's paradox? No, he's not familiar with you? Nobody? There was a Greek philosopher named Zeno. And he came up with a paradox in which he said, his first premise is you can't travel past infinity. Right? You can't travel an infinite distance. Right? So what happens? You put the turtle, he had an experiment with the turtles. You put the turtle here at the two turtles that are racing each other. They put the turtle out, and the turtle moves forward, right? So you're going to measure that distance from point X to point Y, you know, from the starting point where the turtle took off to the point Y where he ended, right? And but that's infinite. Why does Zeno think that's infinite? You call it 50 amos, right? But Zeno called it infinite. Why?
Because he's not going further than that.
Because you could take that area and split it into two, right? So let's say you have 50 amos. Now you've split it into 25 amos. The only problem is you can split that number.
You'll never get to the other side.
Yeah, it's to infinity.
Yeah.
So there's no distance that you could ever define as indivisible. You know, it's not like the atom. You know, split the atom. You know, you can't split it. So you can make an infinite amount of divisions of that area. So how do you traverse any area without traversing infinity? That was Zeno's paradox. I mean, the philosophers wrote a lot about this. Anyway, there's a paradox over here because you can't get exactly there. And if you can't get exactly at any particular point, you're either close to here or close to there. How can you be right down the middle? So Rabbi Natan says, what do you mean? The mission itself assumes you're right down the middle in the case of Mechtzal Mechtz. So I have two questions to ask you. Number one, how would Rashi deal with this Mechtzal Mechtz? Question number two, what did Rabbi Yirmiyah think? What was he thinking?
I have another question. Also, like according to Rashi, I mean, the Gemara deals all the time with Yefshel Tzamtzim or not. So why was this like such a big deal?
Well, apparently Rashi is learning that Yefshel Tzamtzim was accepted as the prem. You know,
even still, like the Gemara does deal with it, and yet when you're
again, but the Gemara has, you know, there's some things the Gemara deals with, but they just get completely rejected. You know, the final conclusion, which is universally accepted, is Yefshel Tzamtzim, and Rabbi Yirmiyah was violating that law. Good. What was Rabbi Yirmiyah thinking? No, he was thinking, so what? So what if it can't exist? Is the Torah only limited to things that could exist in the real world? Is that what the Torah is? The Torah only encompasses answers to concrete, real questions on this earth? Does anybody know of any famous cases which the Gemara says Lo Hoiv Lo Nivra never existed? Have I been so remote? In fact, in the Midrash, there are lists of cases that could never come into being. And the Gemara all over Shas seems to address possibilities that are unusual. The Gemara has a case in I think it's in Menachos, if I remember correctly, where the Kohen was doing his Hazah, and in the middle of his Hazah, his arm fell out. I mean, it's like, give it a break. You know what I'm saying? But there are common cases that don't seem to be reflective of the real world. But nevertheless, the Torah is broader than that. Drosh mekabel schar. There's something called pilpul shel Torah. So when you ask the question, what would the Torah say if, that could be a pure theoretical question. But what's Rashi going to do with Metzal Metzal? Because the Chacham Lishitos said you can't ask us a question and bother our minds unless it could be practical. What about Metzal Metzal? The answer is, Rabbi said Metzal Metzal is a different halacha. What is Metzal Metzal? It's what kind of a suffering? It's a suffering because we don't know which one is Karav. We don't know which one is Karav. Truth will tell you, Yef Shal Tzamtzim, one is more Karav. It's either close to this Shalom or close to that Shalom. But we don't know. That's Mechtzal Mechtzal.
Why don't you know? If you can check Karav, you can know.
I don't know if you could ever check it. Do you have the measuring rods to check it? Are you obligated to check it? How does Karav work? You see, if you're trying to disqualify this bird as a medade, so prove to me that it overstepped the 50 amma line. And that we could actually measure. And we'll determine whether we're dealing with a medade or a mafriya. And that's not an issue. What bothers the Gemara is how would you imagine a case where after we measured it, we came up with one leg in and one leg out? That cannot be. Again, Rabbi Yirmiyah couldn't care less. He's asking theoretical questions. He wants to know conceptually what happens in a suffix situation. By the way, why does Rabbi Yirmiyah think that his suffix is different than the suffix of Mechtzal Mechtzal? Again, Rabbi said, does anybody have this? All right, this question I'm going to leave you with. Again, I want to leave you with this question for tomorrow. Please think this over. According to Rabbi Yirmiyah, Metzal Metzal means we don't know which one is closer, and therefore we say Achlok. Good. So that wouldn't bother the Chacham. What bothers the Chachamim is they don't believe that if we measured it, you'd come out with a case where one leg is in and one leg is out. But my question is, let's say according to Rav Yirmiyah L'shitasa, one leg is in, one leg is out, why should that halacha be anything different than Yachloku of Metzal Mechta? It's a pure suffix, we should say Yachloku. Alright, we'll leave you with that question and we'll pick that up tomorrow.
It's that you look like it's not actually going to measure, you don't have to measure it out, it's what it looks like.
Right, but Rav Yirmiyah says in the case of Medade, that you want to know if this bird is a Medade or not, we're going to actually measure it out. And he says we're going to come up with a case where it's exactly precisely there. And if you can't come up with such a case, I can ask you that question based on the conceptual, theoretical possibility that such a case would be. But even if I grant Rabbi Yirmiyah, that such a case could be, or it's irrelevant and it's a theoretical question, why should, in Rabbi Yirmiyah's frame of reference, in his mind, why should it be any different than the case of Metzal Mechtz?
So Yirmiyah is saying, regardless, there's going to be a case where it's exactly in the middle. Is we're going to come up with a case.
So if it's in the middle, you don't know who should own this bird, who should get rights to this bird, so why not say Yachloku? I mean, why does Rav Yirmiyah think that his question is unique when the Mishnah itself addressed the issue of a Safek, and the Mishnah establishes that in a Safek we say what? We say Yachloku. So that's one question. Then we'd have another question here, because Rabbeinu Tam is going to say that what incurred the wrath of the Chachamim here? Why did Rav Yirmiyah... You know, what was it about Rav Yirmiyah's question that irritated the Chachamim? And he's going to say that the Chachamim accused Rav Yirmiyah of denying Shiurei Chachamim. The Ritva says he was mezalzel the Shiurei Chachamim. The Chachamim say that a medade can only go up to 50 amah, not more. The medade doesn't even have the power to stick its nose out beyond 50 amah.
Okay.
So that's going to be Tosus's approach, and then we're going to have a whole pilpul here to try to figure out, was Rav Yirmiyah really questioning Shiurei Chachamim? Did he understand that 50 amah in the case of a medade is a shiur of Chachamim?
Yeah.
Maybe he had a whole different understanding.